Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
I'm into the college football slate this weekend. I think there's a lot of fun games going on. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. Perloff's like, well, give me next week. Give me Alabama, Georgia. Give me the heavy hitters. I'll take a little USC, Michigan. I'll take a little Tennessee, Oklahoma. And I know our next guest will as well. We like to welcome Josh Pate into the program. Josh Pate's College Football Show. A little on the nose with the title there, Josh, but I like it. Also a big fan of your podcast. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
I am wonderful. I don't understand how in this great world where we only get like 13 or 14 of these Saturdays, how can we as sporting people afford to look past one of these? I don't understand it. We've got plenty on the board this week.
Well, the big noon game is Ohio State Marshall. At some point, I get a little frustrated with some of the scheduling in September.
Look, hey, all due respect now to Marshall, you and I are on the same page with that. When I'm elected commissioner of this sport, the first thing I want to do is I want to fix officiating. The second thing I want to do, both of these can be done on day one, is I want to knock on the door of every conference and say, I'm in charge of scheduling now. No more of this. The non-conference is terrible for a lot of you, but also, even with the way the conference stuff is balanced out, it's not balanced out. October 12th, for example, in this sport, people who hate college football will be drawn to October 12th. That's how big that Saturday is. And then we've got other weekends where, like you just said, one of the premier spots for one of the major networks is featuring Ohio State Marshall. And what can the network do? They can only choose from what's available. So it's like we took a piece of toast and we globbed the peanut butter on it, but then no one spread it out. Someone's got to spread it out.
Well, Josh, you won us over. We'll vote for you when you run for president or whatever of college football. A couple more things to get to, specifically, though, about this week, because why not? We're here. We've got it on the table. I think it's a big deal to me that Michigan right now is really facing a little bit of like a reckoning. Now, Perloff doesn't think any of this matters because they're in this championship glow. Maybe you call it a championship hangover. But if they get boat raced by USC like they did against Texas, and I don't know if that will happen, but if they do, like dot, 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 fill in the blank for me there. Like, what's at stake for Michigan this week?
It's just a complete supreme doubting of the windshield. Like, the rearview mirror tells the story of the past. The trophy is every bit as shiny as it was when they walked off the field in Houston last year. That's true. And I do think there's a little bit of a, hey, whatever happens this year happens. It's worth it because we won it last year. I think there is some of that. But at the same time, this is Michigan. These aren't people who thought, hey, let's do like TCU. Let's have one big year. Hopefully we win it. And then who cares? We're Michigan. Like, we're supposed to be there every year. Georgia doesn't think this way. Alabama doesn't think this way. They would panic, even if they won five in a row. So if you got clown stomped by Texas at home, and then USC did the same thing to you within the span of a calendar month, and that's stuff that they're not used to seeing there over the span of several years, I think there would be a healthy amount of doubt about the future of the program, having still enjoyed the recent history of the program.
Do you think that would come down on Coach Sharon Moore, and maybe he'd be short-lived as head coach?
I think the patience would be short-lived. This Michigan is a lot different about how they hear outside noise. Obviously, they've been well-trained to deal with outside noise. So I don't think it would be like that. I do think that you always have to monitor what the decision makers around a college football program think. It's no different at Florida State or Florida right now as it is Michigan. It doesn't matter, all due respect, what your message board and talk radio culture says. It is the power players around the program, and they love Sharon like they were all in on him. So I'm sure there was somewhat of a logical understanding. There will be a step back. It makes sense to have a step back this year. Now, a leap backwards probably is the kind of conversation at the end of the year where Sharon, all right, look, I know it's tough. We bit the bullet with you, but now, and then they get a serious look on their face. Now, next year, now we got to get this fixed, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah? Okay, handshake.
Yeah, everyone nodding along. Yes. Josh Pate is joining us. Josh Pate's College Football Show. We're big fans. And we're talking about this slate. Now, another one that I like that I think is interesting is Tennessee, because we've all finally learned how to correctly pronounce the quarterback's name, Nico Iamaliava, because he deserves our attention and our respect. Tennessee has been great. They go into Oklahoma, but they haven't really played anybody. They go into Oklahoma, Oklahoma's first home game against an SEC opponent where they are a member of the SEC. This is a big deal. How can Oklahoma engineer an upset as they are the underdogs in this game?
So how about that pronunciation? In this post-Tua world of ours, he has taught us. He has really, really lessened the learning curve on these pronunciations. So I'm going to this game Saturday. I'm really looking forward to it. I've never been to a football game at Oklahoma, just storm chasing. Never been to football in the state of Oklahoma. And so the orange shirt notwithstanding, I think Oklahoma can make this a dogfight. I think there's a very specific game script that they have to follow. But you guys watch college football just like I do. Every year around this time, do we not get taught a valuable lesson? And that is, don't be getting drunk on week one, two, and three against superior competition. Like every year you find yourself in the fourth quarter of a game texting your buddy saying, how did I fall for it? Now, that's not necessarily Tennessee this week. But you, Maggie, you just presented it the right way. Most of the country is talking about this game like it's Tennessee minus 20 and a half. It's Tennessee minus 7. There's a touchdown separating these teams, given the home field baked in as well. And all you have to do, and this is easier said than done, but all you have to do if you're Oklahoma is just present a bunch of firsts for Nico. He's a first-year starter at quarterback already, but how do you put him in the first situation where he has five or six critical third and five-plus situations, where he has to throw the football against by far the best defense he has seen and one of the best he'll see all year? How do you make sure this game feels kind of like that Florida State-Boston College game? Not that Florida State and Tennessee are corollary here, but remember, we got close to halftime of that game, and you're looking at the time of possession discrepancy and the total plays run discrepancy, and you're saying, like, Florida State hasn't had the ball. Like, how has this happened? Well, the way it happens is you find a way to sustain drives, and you get the other guy off the field on a couple of third and shorts early, and that's how easily a football game can go like that. So Oklahoma has no illusions that they're going to hang 40 offensively. They are not a great offensive football team right now, which just means, kind of like Michigan last year, they go into the game knowing defense has to do it for them. And when pretty high-level defensive players know they have to do it for you and their back's against the wall at home in their conference opener, as you said, college kids tend to play at a really high level in that environment. So I think Oklahoma's going to find a way to make it close in the fourth.
I stay in
didn't
this.
Even mention the Josh Heupel revenge factor on this game. Oh. Go ahead, Pearl.
Saying the SEC, how much panic should there be in Georgia about how close the Kentucky game was last week?
There should be responsible concern. I'm not going to go as far as to say panic, because 2 years ago, they went up to Missouri and flat out should have lost a game, and they won the national title that year. The last time they went to Kentucky, they won 16-6, and it was Stetson Bennett's most horrific game in a Georgia uniform. So this kind of stuff is not a stranger to them. But now, I'm from Georgia, so like 80% of my social circle are Georgia fans. So there's one side of the coin. But then the other side is I got all my buddies texting me saying, oh, good, like now that we got that out of the way, now we'll be good to go. We'll be off to the races. And I'm like, you know, you don't just speak that into existence, right? You don't just pass that into being. Like, it could really be that your offensive tackle situation is just not great. And then they just lost their best offensive lineman, Ratledge, for a few weeks before the Bama game. It could be that you had to play three defensive linemen 50-plus snaps, and the next closest guy got 17 because you don't have waves of defensive line depth like you've had in the past. Now, they're going to get a few of them back for Bama. It could be that your wide receivers haven't emerged, and maybe they just won't emerge. It could be that your tight ends aren't nearly as good a blocker as Brock Bowers was, and he's off to the NFL. So these are tangible things that they could be concerned, or it could be that they've got one of the best coaching staffs down there, and Georgia does what good teams do, and they start scaling performance, and they peak at the right time.
Josh Pate is joining us for just a couple more minutes here, and always appreciate his time. Josh Pate's College Football Show. It's about soccer. No, obviously, it's about college football. It's what he does. Which quarterback has impressed you the most this season?
Well, I saw Cam Ward, and he did what he did to Florida in week one. And I'm tempted to say Cam Ward because I don't think that he was as readily like apparent on top of all the quarterback lists in the preseason. Like Quinn Ewers has been good, and he was supposed to be good. Nico, I think anyone closer to Tennessee understood he was going to be a star. Cam Ward, there was a little bit of, we'll see. He's been great down there. But the problem, well, if you want to call it a problem, the problem for him at Miami is no one's going to value that Florida win because they're just going to say, well, who cares? Everyone beats Florida. And Tennessee, or Miami rather, has got a very, very soft schedule by elite team standards. One of the sneaky games to watch this weekend, this is why I recommend people don't tune out this weekend, they go to USF. USF is having to remove the tarps from the upper deck of that stadium down there. So they expect a good crowd. That's the team that had Bama out in the deep end in the fourth quarter before Bama pulled away and made it look like that game had been a blowout. So USF sneakily will be one of the tougher teams Miami faces the rest of the way. Make of that what you will as an indictment on their schedule. But Cam Ward walked in that place. I was down there watching them practice in spring. He had just gotten there. And the way that team gravitated around him, the way he handled himself around those guys, you would have thought he had been there 5 years. And the best like alpha types, as soon as they walk in the room, that's how it is. There aren't many of them, and he's one of them. So Cam Ward's right at the top of my list right now.
Josh, you mentioned Quinn Ewers. If you were Steve Sarkisian, would you be at all, I don't know, worried that Arch Manning is going to play so well, we don't know how much he'll play, that there's a quarterback controversy there? Or do you think that this is obviously still Quinn Ewers' job and there's nothing to really worry about with Arch?
I love it. If I'm Steve Sarkisian, I love it. This is why I have recruited this way. I don't ever use the phrase quarterback controversy unless you're in a place like Michigan. Michigan's got a quarterback controversy. The controversy is they don't have one. That's the controversy. Yep. When you've got two of them, you've got like a quarterback blessing on your hands. And the worst case scenario here is not that you're bad at quarterback. The worst case would be you're so good, you have to tell a really qualified player he's the second best on your team. He doesn't give you the best chance to win. That's a tough conversation, but it's a blessed conversation to have. So they're about to play two inferior teams. Arch is probably going to light it up. And at that point, you've got to trust your judgment and discernment and, again, block out the outside noise. You thought Quinn Ewers gave you the best chance to win at the start of the season. If you still think that by the time the Oklahoma game rolls around, it doesn't matter how video game-ish Arch Manning's stat line looks. You put the guy in who gives you the best chance to win.
Josh, last one for you. Josh Pate is joining us. Now, you mentioned this before about going to Oklahoma to storm Chase. Now, Perloff and I, our show is on across this country. Literally, we're on in Alaska, to Florida, Texas, California, Wisconsin. You name it, our show's on there. Boise, big fans, right? We're from the Northeast. Storm chasing, not really a part of our culture, lexicon. We just don't have the opportunities really to do it. Is there a skill to this, or do you just have to be that fearless person and a little crazy to go after these tornadoes?
I'd say it's not something you need to have. It's something you need to be missing because a normal person would not be into this. So it's like a layer that's supposed to be there mentally that's not there. I grew up in the South. So I grew up in the what you would call Dixie Alley, which is like the South's version of Tornado Alley. Really active, really violent in the spring. and everyone's terrified of it. For whatever reason, I grew up as a kid coming home from school, staying at Meemaw's house every day until my parents picked me up from work watching SportsCenter and the Weather Channel. And I got sucked into atmospheric science. And this is during the whole Twister revolution of the late 90s. And so I've always been fascinated by it. I do it every spring. I've been in Oklahoma three times this year already, just in spring storm chasing. And it's so weird to go out there when the forecast is like partly cloudy, sun, and football. That's why I'm going out there. It's just really weird.
Well, have you had any close calls?
Yeah, I've documented 13 in person so far. March 3rd, 2019, we were in Beauregard, Alabama. I actually smile, but we had 23 fatalities within a quarter mile radius of where we were. EF4 tornado, really bad deal. So it's, you have to have an immense amount of respect. There's like an unmatched adrenaline that you have when you're in the presence of a tornado and how violent things are, even more so than what you could ever see in 4K on your screen. It's unbelievable. And if you've ever seen it, you're either terrified and never want to see it again, or it's like a drug and you're hooked. You'll never stop chasing again.
So if you had a choice between these two broadcast careers, Jim Cantore or Paul Feinbaum, what is the, you know?
Okay. Look, my mom asks me this all the time. If you're telling me I don't get to get out in the field, I'm choosing sports. That's why I did not go into meteorology, because I never thought the Jim Cantore route was possible. I thought it was just hand against a green screen all week, every year. But if I can get out in the field, like if you let me do in college football what Jim Cantore does in weather, I don't know. Don't make me choose. Maybe there's a way to
both.
Do both.
Yeah, definitely
maybe
do
there's
both.
Just a way to do both.
I mean, I think you're kind of doing it for this very narrow thing of storm chasing. Well, you know, stay safe out there and maybe a different hobby at some point down the road. It's like a little safer, scuba diving. Maybe you could bungee jump. I don't know. It's got to be something else.
We'll see. Let me think about it. You and my mom are very on the same wavelength, right?
I know. I am a mom, so that's not that surprising.
You wear that orange shirt to Oklahoma, that you'll be courting trouble.
No. We're peeling this off as soon as we wrap this. Yeah,
got
this
it.
Yeah. You'll be taking your own life into your hands in another way. Josh Patience's College Football Show. Check it out. He's on CBS Sports, CBS Sports HQ. Podcast is great as well. Josh, thanks for the time. We know you're busy.
I appreciate it.
Okay. Storm chasing. You ever done it?
Oh, yeah. No, of course. Well, the funny thing about
New York City,
I think the modern thing, too, is anytime I see about three drops of rain, maybe hear thunder in the distance, that means Maggie lost power in New Jersey.
That's true.
You lose power if there's a quarter inch of rain, it's out.
I know. And it's so annoying. And I don't want to live in the wilderness. And I'm not like a camper. Like, I don't want to do any of that stuff. And so for me, I don't love losing power because it's annoying. It's annoying. But anyway, thank you to Josh Pate. Appreciate that. We've got lots more to do, including we mentioned which injury is going to be most felt in week 3 of the NFL season. We'll tell you about that in just a moment. All right, sports fans, listen up. 1 in 8 men will be diagnosed with prostate cancer, and bladder leaks can be a side effect. That's why Depend is teaming up with the Prostate Cancer Foundation to encourage screening, because health is a long game and it's yours to win. Now, here is the cool part. Through November, Depend is contributing up to $300,000 to prostate cancer research by donating 40 cents for every purchase of Shields, Guards, and Real Fit products. Void in Mississippi. Learn more at depend.com.
This portion of the show is sponsored by the new 2025 Hyundai Tucson Hybrid that has class-leading advanced safety features like the available blind spot view monitor to make your ride more enjoyable. All right, it's an interesting trend out there. I'm not going to stir it up too much, but I'm just saying a lot of guys who cash in this summer seem to have ankle injuries. A lot of guys who have a lot of money. No, that is terribly mean, and I'm not going to stir that up. But there are an amazing amount of injuries going on. Adam Schefter called it the fantasy football apocalypse through 2 weeks. I know very well. I lost out on Carson Steele in my fantasy waiver wire pickup this week. The Chiefs backup, he's a Pacheco, went down. Maggie, we have to talk about these injuries. I feel like that's the story of the early season. And I guess we got to get into which ones are really going to make the big difference.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're talking about guys who are on IR. You know, obviously, like Tua, you know, these big injuries. if you're out for several weeks, obviously that's a different kind of calculus. But just for guys who are going into this week three, yeah, who are either not playing or really banged up, I mean, I think Deebo Samuel. I think we've seen before with the 49ers, even with all this array of talent and all of these offensive weapons, all of a sudden you're down Deebo. You're already down McCaffrey because he's on IR. And it's like, well, you know, you just have, you know, anyone can step up. It's not really like that, I think, as for the 49ers.
Yeah, but who is possibly going to burn them on defense? Like, what is who's Matthew Stafford throwing to?
Well, they might get a little lucky here, but let's not forget this Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan sort of like coaching Jedi mind tricks that they do with each other. Listen, the Rams are in a really tough spot, but not having Deebo, we've seen in the past 49ers lose to lesser competition because Deebo was out.
Yeah, but I feel like this is one where they can be conservative with Deebo. Because if you cannot beat the Rams without Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua, then you're not going to beat the Rams ever. So here's who we got. We got DeMarcus Robinson, who's a pretty good player, Tyler Johnson, Jordan Whittington, Tutu Atwell, who never gets on the field. Generally, like, this is a must. The Rams look really beat up, so I think this is an opportunity to rest Deebo. I feel like I'm generally more bullish on the Niners than you are. I mean, come on. Christian McCaffrey went out and they blew out the Jets defense with Jordan Mason. So you never know. I understand the importance of Deebo, but this particular game, I mean, if they lose this game, it'll be so bad. Don't you think?
Who's your injury person that you're most concerned about?
Well, I'm going close to home. The Eagles are just terrible without A.J. Brown on Monday night. Basically, the entire defense follows Devontae Smith around the field. Then they were throwing to a punt returner. Britton Covey was open. Of course he was open because he can't do anything. So the Eagles need A.J. Brown desperately against a New Orleans team that looks like they can really move the ball offensively. So A.J. Brown, he said a few weeks to a reporter, the team has been a little less specific about it, but I'm going with that as the most impactful week three injury.
And I think you and I are both aligned, not necessarily on whether this is the right decision, but I think we both believe Jordan Love is not going to play.
Oh, I have no idea.
No? Okay, just Tennessee is favored.
Coin flip.
Yeah, Tennessee favored by a very small amount right now. It's just a two-point spread, but I don't know. To me, that kind of made it seem like if Jordan Love was playing, even if he's limited, I felt like they would have been at least like -1. I don't know.
Well, I mean, if you're going to look at analytics, Tennessee, all the numbers, they should be 2-0. It's just, I guess you'd call it a luck metric or just a Will Levis made knucklehead plays.
Yeah.
But they've,
bonehead quotient.
I just think that Tennessee's defense looks really good. And if Jordan Love's not 100%, but I think so what you're saying is that number says Malik Willis to you.
A little bit, but maybe it actually might be a tad higher if Malik Willis is playing just because the knowledge of Malik. I don't know.
Well, obviously, we'll know more today. We'll know more tomorrow.
Yeah.
I would say 60-40 Jordan Love plays.
I'm okay with it. I really am. I'm okay with it because I think this is just going to be an injury he's going to have to manage the entire season. And might as well let the offensive line and the receivers get used to whatever this version is of Jordan Love, because this is what it's going to be, whether he plays this week or not.
Oh, yeah. But as long as it's not a tear, he'll be fine by the end of the season, I think. I mean, they have such good PT people there.
Jealous.
And also,
this is all Perloff's calamities.
He's not a running quarterback. I think his biggest weapon is his mind, probably. Not to be too Jedi about this, but he's got a great arm. I think he's fine.
CeeLo is here with an update for us. What's going on in the world, CeeLo?
Schefter just put out a tweet a little while ago citing a source who called it 50-50 on Jordan Love, that he has a legit chance to play.
You
say 60-40, so maybe that line starts to change a little bit as he does a little bit more work in practice as the week goes on.
50-50 with quarterbacks, especially young quarterbacks, is about 95-5 in today's NFL. Trevor Lawrence is like 2% chance that we'll see Trevor Lawrence. There he is, whipping the ball around, off into the other team.
I'm glad
it wasn't a good idea that he's out there. I was just thinking, if Perloff somehow had the inside scoop, you know, Woj just retired. Is this something Perloff could take up? There's a hole in the industry.
Have you ever broken
Schefter's source?
I mean, we've all, there are many people in this industry who are in the same boat as me. Maybe once broken a story and realizing how incredibly awful the experience is in every possible way. It is like, not like saying it's something in an interview, but when you find out something, and like either one time I broke a story, I think with Peter when I was at SI.
Peter King.
Peter King, we just had on earlier. It was the most awful experience of my life.
What was the story?
I can't even remember. It was something like a buddy of mine, like Kevin Cobb, was going to play or something. And yeah, it just was terrible.
What Why? Was terrible about
well,
it?
Well, the team was like, what are you putting that out there for?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, people are mad at you for sure. They don't like when you have information and they don't.
Also, it wasn't like 100% sure that it was actually going to turn out to be right because you never know. So it was completely stressful. If you break a story, say this guy's going to play, until he's out there on the field, you never know.
Can you imagine the stress with the Woj Shams? Is Danny Hurley going to be the coach of the Lakers or is it going to be J.J. Redick? I mean, that's high stakes, coach of the Lakers.
When I was at SI, too, anything that you publish had to have four fact checkers, too. I don't think it's quite the same because there's not enough money to pay all those people. But that was stressful, too, because they're like, are you sure? I'm like, I don't know. No, leave me alone. Call Peter King.
I remember once one of the fact checkers, they wrote something about me and my boss at the time and put it in the magazine, like a nice little thing. And the fact checkers called literally to ask how tall I was because in it, it said that I was like, had this sort of tall presence. And they're like, hey, are you 5'9"?
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I just have 11 size feet. I'm actually only 5'8".
You would do one story at Sports Illustrated, there'd be seven editors on it. Now, I think you see things that are published with half an editor. Maybe AI just does it. I don't even know if they have real editors.
Very different time.
I had one talking about breaking a story when I was covering the Jets, which it wasn't, I mean, I was fed the information, okay?
Yeah.
And this was...
You got picked. Good for you.
I got picked. It was a connection. I won't reveal who, but someone who definitely would know about the starting quarterback for the Jets. It was the night before the game. And this was when Bryce Petty, Baylor fame, was getting his first NFL start. And I got it fed to me. So I put it out there. Nobody else had it. No one then confirmed it that night. Not even till the next
he was starting.
Correct.
Okay.
To the point where I got a phone call from SNY TV here in New York. I was at a dinner on Long Island that night. I did a phoner with them. And it was out there, and people were, you know, tweeting back at me or whatever. But, you know, normally people that are on the beat after it's out there, they'll follow up with somebody to get the confirmation, and the source confirms all the way till the next morning, to the point where people on the beat who were much more established than myself were, like, legit annoyed. They could not get the team to confirm it.
Wow.
And it wasn't until the next morning when Schefter finally on his Sunday mornings put it out there. To the point where I was actually nervous. I'm like, oh God, is this going to be wrong? Like I put this out there. Trust
over.
This source, you know, and it turned out to be right. And that was like the one time where, to your point, it's not always a feel-good experience. It can be excruciating sometimes as well. A little different than what you experienced, but
yeah, have
it was
you guys
a little scary.
I'm sure a lot of people in this industry have had stories that you knew about, but you weren't allowed to report
on.
Like, it was an open, not an open secret, but everyone knew, a lot of people knew that Michael Sam was going to announce that he was gay. That was like in the industry everywhere, but everyone's like, well, I can't break it. I can't break it. I can't break it. For some reason, I knew that. So someone's like, yeah, in 2 weeks, he's going to say this, but you can't say anything. That happens a lot, I would think.
Yeah, there was a time, that, this is not the same, but where SI did break a story about... was it Jason Collins who came out?
Yes.
Jason Collins.
I think he wrote a column announcing it. Yeah.
He wrote a guest column. And again, this is a time where, God, this feels so old, where we actually even cared about any of this. And it was a, you know, very pivotal moment for guys to come out. And it was Jason, not Jaron, right? Jason Collins. Yeah. They're twins, right? The basketball players. And we were going to do something for SI for the video side, which was I was working. And they wouldn't tell me who the person was until we were sitting on the set.
Wow.
And I was like, guys, like, I'm not the leak. I've never been the leak. Yeah. I would never do that. I love this job. I don't want to get fired. I don't care. And they would not tell me until we were sitting on the set who it was.
Well, you probably had also, Maggie, a lot of like flat out embargoes. Like you cannot, where it's even announcing a book title or something where you can't, you can tape it, but you can't say anything about it until it airs at a certain date.
The biggest one, the biggest secret's the one that I actually felt the most like nervous about, even though I knew I wasn't going to say anything, I trust myself, was the swimsuit cover. Like, I knew the swim when that was still a big deal, and the SI swimsuit cover, and who was going to be on the cover, and the big reveal, and all of that. And I knew weeks before because we would do stuff, or like at least a week. And walking around with that info, you just can't say anything.
Who was that cover? Do you remember that happened multiple times?
A few of them, because we used to do these fun, like, reveal videos to the model.
I remember one time, sorry, this is, can I do a humble brag?
Yeah, go ahead.
Terry McDonald, the former editor of Sports Illustrated, pulled me in and he said, Andrew, which of these three women do you think I should do for the swimsuit cover? And it was Bar Raffaelli, maybe Kate Upton, and maybe somebody else. And I said, Terry, you can't go wrong with all three.
Put all three on the cover.
I was like, 12-year-old Andrew would pick all three.
Yeah. No one's going to criticize any of these
and
choices.
None of them were, by the way, there was the funny thing about this swimsuit cover, there's barely any swimsuits on the cover by the end. not a lot of material. All three were three-quarters naked.
Yeah, mm-hmm. More.
It's going to be the swimsuit edition minus the swimsuits.
It's basically just dental floss as a as a swimsuit. Where were we? CeeLo, back to you.
Yes, you guys mentioned Will Levis. I think Perloff did in some of the boneheaded plays. We saw the reaction from his head coach, Brian Callahan, coming off that like bowling ball backwards pass / fumble against the Jets over the weekend. So Levis, of course, when he met the media yesterday, asked about that, and I thought handled it pretty well.
He's not a yeller and a screamer, but he can be, and then there's certain situations that allow for that, and that definitely was one of those situations. So I didn't bat an eye at it. I took the coaching, and I knew I was yelling at myself in my head the same way he was yelling at me.
Wise answer, I would say.
Definitely. It's
the way to handle it. Very well done. As far as maybe not handling things with the media so well, but I guess it doesn't really matter for him because he does whatever he wants at Colorado, Deion Sanders continues to have these run-ins with both local and national media. Did you hear about this one with the reporter? You guys talked about this already?
Yeah, but you can play it for us.
With the meteorologist, about the meteorology report for the upcoming game.
Oh, God, I did not hear.
This is different. What do you have?
I don't know if this was from yesterday. It was in the system, so I guess looking ahead to the weekend and the potential for weather, which was much to the surprise of Deion, as this one reporter learned.
Hey, Coach, with potential rain in the forecast for Saturday.
We got rain? What forecast you got?
Just changed this morning.
No, let me see. It ain't say rain on mine. Who do you use? Straight up.
I just saw it from a local meteorologist this morning.
There you go.
A meteorologist?
That's a mistake. I got 5169. This joke has been accurate.
All right. So he's basically, saying, well, what I have information is better than the meteorologist. And the reporter tried to respectfully continue.
Either way, let's just say there is rain on the
forecast.
No,
we're not going to say there is rain. I'm one of those good weather men. When you say 60%, I say 40%. 40% chance that
it rains. A meteorologist that I respect highly said that there's a pretty good chance it rains on Saturday.
Mine says 30%.
Okay. I don't know which one I got. I mean, need to check mine.
I mean, what are we doing here?
Now I want to see if it's going to rain.
I only want to tune in to see.
Even answer the question about either if there's rain, whether there's going to be or not, but if there is,
I'm going to be on Deion's side. That guy was fighting back a little too hard.
Like, I agree.
Dude, you just got
really?
Nailed.
I looked it up.
If you like pull up your phone and it says 70% chance of not raining, that guy got burned.
Wow. It's going to rain at 10 o'clock.
Stop being so defensive. A local meteorologist, that's when I knew he was in trouble.
Okay.
It's called
Deion
my cell phone.
Here. Interesting. Okay.
Felt like I didn't watch the clip. I felt like Deion was trying to have fun with him.
Yeah.
And the guy just took it really seriously.
All right.
And then maybe it became a little more serious, but I really don't think Deion was trying to be a jerk there.
No,
until the reporter kind of made it serious.
Well, I'll tell you another phenomenon there. I don't know if you guys have this. My in-laws refuse to use the GPS. They think they understand the roads better than the GPS.
Oh, my gosh.
This guy they'll use it on occasion, but this guy going with a local meteorologist over his cell phone reminded me, he's old school. I saw it on the news. I'm like, yes, your phone is updating in real time, dude.
Do your in-laws still have, the paper maps in the car?
No,
they
got
to pull over to the side of the road?
They like to battle the GPS. It's she thinks she knows what she's doing. She does. I'm like, it's a computer.
Well, right now it sounds like you're battling Channel 4's Doppler 3000.
That's
I quite frankly would go with the Doppler.
No, but that's already dated. And why would you go with the Doppler over your cell phone?
Because they're giving me the 5-day forecast and I need it.
No, I would definitely go with whatever's latest on my phone.
Yeah, I mean, the local meteorologist is known for being able to swing and miss often and still maintain employment. So.
They're the most, you think football coaches are criticized. The local meteorologists are always destroyed.
Well, because they're often wrong and that's allowed.
But I don't think that they're destroyed. I think everyone kind of understands. It's kind of like us. We can pick games and be wrong as long as the case is made and it makes sense. That's kind of it. See, I'm on college football weather. .com.org and I'm seeing 60% chance of rain.
Oh, see, we've got conflicting reports.
Remember,
here
Nick Costos told us about these websites that gamblers
did that update?
every 10 seconds.
If you go to Apple location for the weather, yeah. and you go to Boulder, if you go to Saturday, it's supposed to rain at 10 o'clock at night, and it's supposed to be heavy rain. So
the game starts at 8 Eastern.
Yeah, so maybe the end.
That's the other thing. If you get a percentage for the entire day versus, hey, we're playing in this time window,
no,
the
percentage is going to
be different.
I got to be honest. I got clear on Saturday.
What's POP?
Here we go. This is the...
I'm in Boulder right now.
Being made. He's got
I see the rain coming Sunday.
He's got late rain. You've got 60%. He's got Sunday. We're all over the map here.
If you click it and go to hourly precipitation, it pops up.
See, I trust the youngest person here. That's Ryan.
That's a fair theory. I agree with that. But.
I think we all agree with that.
Wait, are you what app are you on?
The weather app.
You're not on this whatever Dion. What was he said? 5961 or 6150? Whatever he said, I've never heard of.
So
personally,
I went to that college football weather thing for LSU South Carolina, and it said 65% chance of rain, and it was the brightest, sunniest day in the history of the world. So like, I was like, I don't know if I'm not using that site again.
Oh man. Last hour, we played the Brewers celebrating their division title with Bob Uecker in the clubhouse, talked a little about clubhouse celebrations, and I said, well, for a division title, but when you talk about just clinching a postseason berth, which the Yankees did last night, extra innings win over the Mariners, and just to give you a feel for how pumped up they were in the clubhouse, here was manager Aaron Boone addressing his team before everything went nuts.
We got a division to go win, and we got a championship to go win. So enjoy this first step. Congratulations, and let's go!
And the spraying begins, and every reporter and interviewer in the locker room was getting doused with it. This on the radio side was Susan Waldman with Garrett Cole.
Yeah, it feels, I mean,
why
it feels really good.
Why are you dripping off your nose?
I have so much beer and champagne on me right now. It's a great cold plunge.
This is the New York Yankees. They have more postseason berths than anyone else in history. It sounds like they just won the World Series.
Yeah, you know, normally Perloff and I are on total opposite sides of this. I'm like, oh, let them celebrate. It's 162 games. You need something to look forward to. That's an alarming video, though. They do sound like they just won the World
Aaron
Series.
Aaron Judge, it means more because we didn't make it last year. Come on, man.
Well, like, I mean, I get that a little bit, but that did sound a little World Series-esque.
Jazz Chisholm even said, you know, we're going to go win a World Series. I know he's new to all this, so he's excited. And he's not used to it, but kind of sums up what's been going on with the Yankees in the last 15 years.
I was really giving him the benefit of the doubt that I heard that audio. I was like, uh-oh, you guys don't nearly have the pitching staff to be celebrating like this.
Oh, man. All right, let me finish up with this. You talked about Adrian Wojnarowski retiring and going to St. Bonaventure to be the GM of the men's basketball program, his alma mater. So his now former colleague and NFL counterpart, Adam Schefter, I thought, summing it up best yesterday.
He wanted his life back. Mm. He didn't want to have to work on holidays. He didn't want to be away from more family gatherings. He didn't want to have to, as we had to do in the past, take a shower with your phone up against the shower door so you could see a text that's coming in, or take your phone with you to the urinal and hold it in one hand while you're trying to take care of your business in the other. That's the life that we live.
A little behind the scenes there on what it's like to be Schefter.
You don't want to be having your phone, looking at your phone in one hand, wiping your butt with the other hand is essentially what he said.
Right. Or end up on Instagram Live like Shannon Sharp last week or wherever that was.
You don't want to be here with Michelle.
Maybe Shannon knew that Woj was retiring. He was like, let me get a head start on this. Oh, no, wait.
You don't want to be with Michelle when she's doing that thing you like. And you accidentally Instagram live it. Thank God we don't know what that thing is.
Oh, God.
I don't even want to guess. Yeah.
I'll sit that one out.
With my wife. Yeah. Well, it wasn't his wife, but whatever.
Hey, I have a question, though. Do you really think it is necessary to stop and take a call? Is it necessary to do that to be Woj?
I guess if you don't want to get beaten to it.
I can't imagine that.
Maybe it takes like a minute to pee, you know? I don't know.
You see how a lot of these go though, right? Like he'll post it and then, you know, three other reporters have it like a minute later.
Less.
Right.
And then they'll have to like courtesy him.
It's all coming from the same spot, so you got to be the quickest if you want to be first. Right?
I don't know. Is that how it works?
I always assume.
Not in all cases.
I assume he's sitting on a lot of that stuff.
Often it's in the drafts.
All right. But my point being, when you have four or five of them all saying the same thing, and happens in the NFL all the time with injury news, whether it's Garofolo, Rapoport, Schefter, whoever.
But the agents tell you like 3 days in advance this is coming.
Okay. But then maybe the text is, hey.
Then you really don't want to lose.
You can go with it now.
Yeah.
So that's. Some are exclusives that no one else has, and it takes a while, but a lot of times it's within seconds or a couple minutes of each other.
Imagine. I don't know. Do you think he's picked up the phone for a source and he's just like...
Probably.
That catch it a bad time.
Probably a decent bet.
Yeah. Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
All right. I'll laugh to myself about that one. Thank you, CeeLo. Great job all morning long. Coming up, which 0-2 NFL team is in a must-win situation? This is a tip of cap of our pal Dave Damashek. Must win in week 3. You betcha. Do that next.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. People throw around the term must win. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. We don't love doing that around here, Pearl, but there are a couple 0-2 teams. Let's just say backs against it. Really could use a W this weekend.
Yeah.
Who do you have in terms of, if we're going to power rank, who's number one on your list of teams that absolutely cannot afford to go to 0-3?
Well, actually, you know what? This might not be in the spirit of it, but I think this game for Baltimore is incredibly important because Cincinnati has an easy game right this week. They play the do they have Washington or somebody like that?
Oh, is it the doubleheader Monday night game? Yes, yeah, the late game Monday against the Commanders. Bills, Jags are the early game.
So the Ravens' unlikely loss to the Raiders to me just changed the entire perception of this season. So now they play another kind of desperate team in the Cowboys. I think Baltimore's got to bring it here. Or because 0-3 in that division is going to be a tough hole. Looks like Pittsburgh's going to have their normal winning season. Cleveland, by the way, they came back in week 2 and looked tough defensively. I just think that this is an important game for them because it's weird. You don't think the Ravens will ever disappear, but 0-3 would be really bad. That's the one that jumped out to me.
Yeah, and I think we're just kind of conditioned that the Bengals can overcome these slow starts if Joe Burrow's healthy, and so it doesn't feel like there's this sort of panic.
They have an easy 2 games to get right. So I think the Ravens have a lot more pressure. This feels like a pressure game.
Yeah, going to Dallas, afternoon game. This is going to be a tough one. For me, it's the Jags and the Jacksonville Jaguars. And I don't know what the external expectations were for the Jags, but I think once you pay Trevor Lawrence, the internal expectations is you're going to have a bounce back year if he's healthy. And now you got Stroud in the division. So this is not going to be a cakewalk. And then on top of why I think this is so important, I think the Jags are the type of franchise who will overreact to stuff. You know, they cycle through coaches. Now, listen, you had to fire Urban Meyer. Like that was, they were in a no-win situation there. But is Doug Peterson safe if they go to 0-3? Would they do something rash? Who's even calling plays? Like, how do we not know this? I don't know. I just find that Jacksonville, I could see it as a place where internally the expectations are a lot higher than externally. And if they go to 0-3, it's going to feel like the sky is falling.
Yeah, I think the sky is falling. I think they spent a lot of money last year and they did not deliver, especially what was supposed to be an easy division. You let a rookie quarterback win the division. In fact, you weren't even second in that division. I think it's real, the concerns. For some reason, I get the sense that Doug Peterson has lost his fastball there. I mean, they blew it in week 1. That's a tough, that felt like such a devastating loss to Miami that it was like 2 losses. I think that sometimes you lose one so bad it affects you.
Yep.
I'm worried about this team. for sure. It is a must win, but even that, I don't think that they're on the right course. Something is missing there.
And listen, now they got to go to Buffalo and try to win in Buffalo on Monday night. That's going to be a lot of eyeballs.
I mean, you could point at the GM who took Trayvon Walker over Aiden Hutchinson, and Aiden Hutchinson is now arguably the biggest game changer in the game right now. I mean, he's fantastic. There's a lot of hope for Trayvon Walker, but like, it's roster building and it's coaching, and there's just an immense amount of pressure. You're absolutely right.
Let's update our poll question. If you were an actor, would you gain 100 pounds for a movie role? I'm a little surprised by the results here. Overwhelming. 71% say no. Absolutely not. So you're not, I get it. Gaining 100 pounds is not ideal, but in theory, you'd be getting paid well for this, right?
Yeah, it's funny. When I read a story about an offensive lineman who needs to put on weight to keep on weight, I'm always so jealous of that guy. He gets to eat whatever he wants and all milkshake, milkshake, milkshake. I know I'm a skinny guy, but that's because I don't want to eat five milkshakes anymore. This would be amazing. And if you're going to be an actor, you got to go full De Niro. Why would you not gain weight and lose weight? That's how you win an Oscar. That's all they care about. It's like height in a quarterback is losing weight as an actor.
I know. It's like for a man, how you get an Oscar is to like gain a lot of weight or lose a lot of weight. And like women, it's like you have to get naked. Funny how that double standard.
For men, you have to be Tom Hanks or British or lose or gain weight.
I'm sorry. Or for a woman, you have to appear on camera with no makeup on, and therefore you will be called brave.
Frances McDormand, is that a...
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Charlize Theron in Monster or whatever. It's like, oh, how brave she was.
She had ugly makeup on.
Yeah, they made her look worse, but that was for the role. Okay. No, people are prioritizing their health these days, and I like it.
Nah, that's a huge mistake on this 70%. I'm strongly in the 30%. If you're going to bother to be an actor, then you got to go all in.
I know, but I forgot who said something about method actors. They go like, oh, you got to get in this like mindset and you got to do everything you can to be a method actor. How about just act? Isn't that what the training's for?
Tony Hopkins.
That's who said it, right?
Yeah, yeah. Did we hear that story together? I think we did.
Was it to
Robert Downey Jr., I think.
How about just act?
Or no, I don't know.
Jared Leto's Robert Downey Jr. Method acting, and people hate it who's around him. Jared Leto, like when he does that.
Remember the guy who played Elvis and then had to keep talking like him for like weeks after? He couldn't undo it. Austin Butler, whatever his name is.
He still sounds like Elvis. I saw him the other day.
Thank you, DJ Stewart. Thank you, Ryan Botcher. Thank you to Chris Lopresti and to Andrew Kaplan, Weedo's Coffee Drinkers. Thank you to the one and only Peter King who joined us and Josh Pate. If you missed any part of the show, download the Maggie and Perloff podcast. See you tomorrow.